is Deanna, and our guest today is Chris Bennett. He is the author of Liber 420, Cannabis, Magical Herbs, and the Occult, as well as several other books. And he has participated or added or contributed chapters on the historical role of cannabis in several other works. He is a real scholar, just very impressed. It's just wonderful. In your book, you talk about Freemasons, guilds, secret societies. Can you speak to us about those?
Yeah, well, this again goes back to certain aspects of Masonic history, mostly related to what's known as the Scottish Rite. The Scottish Rites themselves claim to have been derived from the Templars. Now, whether that's historically accurate or not is definitely a matter of debate. Many scholars believe that this was something that was created in the 18th century. But the stories of their origins themselves all attribute them to the Templars. And in some of the Scottish Rites, there's a drink variously referred to as the bitter cup, which is compared to Jesus's drink on the cross. You know, it's that's why they're called the bitter cup. It's the same drink that Jesus took on the cross that we've been talking about in relation to the crucifixion and resurrection. And they are basically death and rebirth ceremonies. And I have suggested that in their origins, there may be some indications that this is actually related to the Templars' use of cannabis, and that they grew out of this knowledge about the bitter cup and the crucifixion and resurrection, which we were discussing being a potential potent drug potion, which threw Jesus into a suspended animation state, mimic death, and the whole crucifixion being a hoax, in a sense. And so this is what I'm suggesting, is that there was some element of this that survived. And we know of figures in the 18th century, such as Johann Schroffer, who were serving punches at complicated rituals and Masonic rites, now known under the name Phantasmagoria, where special effects were used, such as reflections in mirrors with lanterns reflected into pillars of smoke to make it appear as figures were in the smoke and taking form, you know, but combined with the use of a psychoactive punch. And cannabis has been suggested as the likely culprit in this case, because Schroffer was a coffee house owner, and the coffee was often traveling with hashish and vice versa at this time period. And similarly, Cagliostro has been suggested as going back to 18th century references, has been suggested as having used a famous alchemist and Freemason, has been suggested of using cannabis and other drugs at his Masonic rituals. Recently, an individual, P.D. Newman, has written a book suggesting that Cagliostro was using some preparation of the potent chemical DMT, the active ingredient in the ayahuasca brews of the jungle. People were seeing visions and things like that at the Masonic rites of Cagliostro. And we know later figures like Aleister Crowley were using in their initial rituals for organizations such as the Order Templar Orientis, which they themselves claim connection to the Knights Templars, that drugs were used in the bitter cup of their versions of these earlier Masonic rites. So definitely some of the quasi-Masonic groups and fringe Masonic organizations were using such psychoactive substances in this sort of context. And there's, you know, even in the 17th century, they in Masonic documents that have been unearthed in papers recently, they refer to an elixir and stuff like that, and how having a knowledge of this elixir was needed to go back up to the seventh level.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Hmm.
the whole occult scene, you know, like Rosicrucians as well. Pascal Beverly Randolph, who was the first American Rosicrucian Grand Master, who lived from 1825 to 1875, he was also the biggest commercial importer of hashish into North America in his lifetime. And he was prescribing cannabis in various formulations. There's indications he may have even had some idea about the differing effects of what we came to know as THC and CBD, offering different extractions with different effects of cannabis in various tinctures and stuff like that in the United States by mail order, and traveling around the country with his wife Mary Jane selling them as well. And he wrote extensively about the role of cannabis as, you know, medicinal qualities as well as its spiritual qualities, and deeply involved with the Rosicrucian movement, and likewise over in Europe and France with figures like Di Giotto and other figures associated with Rosicrucian. They were deeply involved with the use of cannabis for magical purposes, mirror scrying, and also astral traveling, which is basically stepping through the looking glass of the magic mirror into the astral realm, you know. And it's interesting, you know, like I thought a lot about how cannabis came to be used in conjunction with magic mirrors or seeing visions in smoky fumigations or in entering the astral plane. And I've concluded in Liber 420 that this may have some relationship with cannabis's complicated relationship with dreaming. Now, one of the effects that daily users of cannabis report is they dream a lot less. And I've noticed that myself. But then I've noticed that, you know, a couple of times I've woken up at 4 in the morning or something like that. Maybe it was 4:20. And consumed a little cannabis. And then I've gone back to sleep. And I've had the most intense lucid dreams that I've ever had. And so I thought, well, that's interesting. Because generally you think of cannabis as something that suppresses dreams. But interestingly, in the 1980s, they were studying cannabis's effects on melatonin, which is very influential on dreaming, melatonin levels. And they found that immediately following consumption of cannabis, smoked cannabis in this case, about 20 minutes later, they took a baseline of the person's melatonin, then again 20 minutes later, and they said they noticed as much as a 4,000 times increase of daily melatonin levels. So there's this huge spike of melatonin taking place with cannabis use. And so spiking it all day through using cannabis likely depletes its release at night and causes a suppression of dreaming, whereas in my case of using it at 4 in the morning and taking it, I get this, I've already been into kind of a deeper sleep state. I go back into sleep and I get this huge spike of melatonin, and it causes these very vivid, realistic dreams. And the mirror may have acted as sort of a template for the split between the unconscious or subconscious mind and the regular state of awareness. And when I'm talking about the Freud termed the subconscious and what his student Jung termed the unconscious, we're talking about an area of the mind that is hidden beneath the regular states of awareness and is not in our present awareness. When we think about dreaming, this is one of the most obvious areas where we can see this. We're in a dream, yet at the same time, we are the one telling ourselves that dream. We're the other people in that dream. And so it's this clear division of consciousness. Our aware consciousness is the subject to our unconscious, subconscious, when we dream at night. And it is this aspect of consciousness which early researchers into the effects of cannabis, such as Dr. J.J. Moreau in the 19th century, and their comparison to the cannabis intoxicated state with the dream state and also states of madness that people were experiencing in asylum, of what we know as the unconscious and subconscious mind. Now, Freud, as opposed to Jung, he saw the subconscious as being like things like repressed memories, daily information that we don't need to remember, just kind of pushed off into this basement of awareness that once in a while would rise up. maybe in present in issues we have with our mummy issues and projection onto women and issues around dirt and things like that relating to our potty training, things like that. Whereas his student Jung, he thought that there was below this an even deeper level of consciousness that was related to the experience of the human species, the memory of our ancestors. And he referred to this aspect of the collective unconscious. And he suggested that myths and symbols appealed to our conscious awareness because an aspect of our genetic memory remember these things. And he compared this to the function known as instinct in other animals. A sea elephant is born for food the day it's born. A deer can stand up and walk around. We have this, but it's buried beneath our frontal lobes and our ability for higher thinking, and it's deeply buried in there through the subconscious and the unconscious. And it may be that cannabis and these other substances, psychoactive substances that affect the pineal gland, like DMT and mescaline, cannabis indirectly through a spike in melatonin, may be accessing deeper kind of genetic and collective memories and awareness of the species. And I think that is really profound, you know. And so in a sense, the one speaking to these mirror diviners and mirror scryers from the mirror was the same one that was telling them their dreams at night.
Wow. But they
willfully invoking that aspect of consciousness and attaining what in alchemical terms might be deemed the marriage of the sun and the moon, the marriage of our present aware daytime awareness with our moon, noetic, poetic form of awareness under the guise of the moon.
Now, I think that a lot of people have a calcified pineal gland.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I've
heard it doesn't work.
Yeah, that you know, that may be the case. I don't know enough about the science behind that to really comment on the alleged calcification from fluoride and other chemicals that were being forced upon us. I think I don't know. You know, I'm feeling like my mine's okay. We don't use fluoride.
Oh, I think it probably is.
Yeah.
Talk to us about the Kabbalah. You mentioned the Kabbalah in.
Yeah, well, you know. At least one Kabbalistic scholar, Ari Kaplan, who was also suggested kind of Bossom as a potential reference to cannabis, has noted that early Kabbalists were noted for burning grasses in some of their rituals, which might be psychoactive herbs. And there's other indications of the use of psychoactive herbs. But I think you need a basic understanding of what's known as the Kabbalistic Tree of Life to understand any of the Western magical traditions. And I include in this things like astrology and tarot as well as ceremonial magic. And basically, the Kabbalistic Tree of Life is said to be a map of the universe, and it's if you Google it, you'll be able to find an image of it pretty quick. And it's different spheres on this tree-like structure going up in three different pillars. And in the spheres, the pillars actually represent planetary bodies: the sun, the moon, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn. The main seven planets. And these different planets are said to be represented in the microcosm, the little universe, which is the man, and the macrocosm, the big universe. And because of this correlation, they affect these channels and aspects of ourselves in them, you know. And in a sense, you can kind of see, you know, in Mars might be our will to war, and Jupiter our will to power, and Mercury our will to communicate, and Venus our will to love, you know, and these different aspects of consciousness in these spheres. And these spheres and all the pathways between these spheres, the 22 pathways that connect them, are thought to map out the universe. And a lot of every plant, animal, color, incense type, you know, mineral, was attributed to one of these spheres or the pathways between these spheres in association. And so if you were doing a ritual that was, you know, to be, say, focused around battle, you might do something that was dedicated to the planet Mars with all the different associations with Mars, the specific color Kabbalistically associated with it, and this type of thing. And this is the basis of a lot of the type of magic you see in the Picatrix and Sefer Raziel and other types of things, and why certain plants are used in certain rituals and that sort of thing. So it's fairly specific in that way, but it's also a map of our consciousness. And it's like a map of consciousness and components, that our anger and our love are in different aspects of our consciousness that come together, you know, with the other aspects of the will to power and hunger and love and all these types of things, to form this cohesive state of consciousness which we experience the world through. And that through an understanding of the Kabbalah, we could undo these various spheres of consciousness. And it's kind of related to the to Gnosticism in this way as well, where the seven planetary spheres were seen as archon that clothed light in matter as it descended into matter, and had to be taken back off again as we travel back through the planetary spheres to the kingdom of light at death. And so it's by understanding these different spheres of consciousness and how that we make up consciousness, we can undo them as well and get down to that core of consciousness, you know, in the Kabbalistic view, which is the Godhead of consciousness, you know, which may well be intertwined with these deeper aspects of the collective unconscious that I was referring to, and genetic memory, which theoretically contain genetically a memory of going back to the very origins of life. You know?
Wow. Now, you have a chapter on Shakespeare.
Yeah.
We do have a caller, and then let's talk about Shakespeare on pot. We have a caller. It's Fred in Michigan.
Hi, Deanna.
Hi,
Chris.
Hey, Fred, how you doing? Hey,
this is great. Thanks. When I was a pre-med student, I had a German lady, Schindler, PhD for medical botany. And I was introduced, this would have been 1979, I was introduced to all of this. Cannabis, is it, you know, ancient cultures, medicinal mushrooms. Chris mentioned, you know, the herb of immortality. Well, there's a sort of like a counterpart. A reishi is known as the mushroom of immortality. And
yeah.
Chris, when you mentioned melatonin, here in Michigan, tart cherries is a big-time cash crop, the biggest in Michigan. So about 25 years ago, I bought my first bottle of tart cherry concentrate, okay? And it was a company from up north, and on the bottle, it listed three major university studies. One, Michigan State University, they proved that tart cherry compounds are 10 times more effective as an anti-inflammatory analgesic than all other known NSAIDs, etc. University of Iowa proved that tart cherry compounds were 7 times more effective at inducing tumor regression than all known tested anti-tumor, anti-cancer agents. And I know that cannabis, medicinal cannabis, whatever, has the same attributes. The other study, University of Texas, a guy by the name of Russell J. Reeder, MD. Speaking of melatonin, Dr. Reeder proved that with proper consumption, maybe a couple tablespoons of tart cherry concentrate a day, would ensure optimum levels of melatonin production by the pineal gland. When that would happen, people with hypertension, that would be normalized, and they also found that optimum levels of melatonin not only prevented cancer, but reversed it. How do you like that?
Wow, cool. Interesting.
That is cool. Okay, we're going to a break. We'll pick this up on the other side. Be right back. We'll be right back.
We're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds, up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
And our guest today is Chris Bennett. He is the author of Liber 420, Cannabis, Magical Herbs, and the Occult. Do we still have Fred on?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
I'm here, Deanna. Hey, I want to bring up something about King Baldwin II of Jerusalem, 1118. The Templars were there, and that's when they apparently organized officially at King Solomon's Temple with King Baldwin II. That was 1118. And I suspect they might have been lighting up their doobies at that point. I also want to bring up that I met a young lady in her late 20s, and this was a decade ago. She was born with a deformed spine. I forgot what it's called. Anyway, pain hell every day, Deanna. She was like, awesomely painful just to get up out of bed. And she started drinking high-quality cannabis liquid concentrate and abracadabra, and like, I don't know what, I think she said 24 hours, she's pain-free. And that was a decade ago. And Deanna and Chris, on Michigan State University's FM station, every Sunday they have a special broadcast. A year ago, a young lady, a military vet, who was diagnosed with some really bad cancer because she was exposed to DU, a lot over there. And so they said, well, and her name is Spalding, and they told her, look, Karen, if you don't do what we tell you, you're going to be dead in 6 months. You know what they wanted her to do, right? Radiation, sure. Chemo. And she says, no, I have a better idea. Right? So she goes on to the liquid cannabis protocol, drinking it, totally pain-free, totally cancer-free. And at the time frame when she was supposed to have been dead, totally free of cancer, totally cured. And she said her doctors avoid her like she's a terrorist. They won't talk to her.
Ignorance is bliss, I suppose.
More miracle stories like, for sure, yeah. You know, lots
Chris,
of people.
I got to ask you, Chris, because here in Michigan, that company that I told you about, the tart cherry, on their label, they had all these university studies that I identified. Okay, so about, I don't know, 6 months, 9 months later, when I went to restock, I buy like 9 bottles at a time. I go back, and the label is totally different. I called them up, and they said, yeah, well, the fraud and death agency told us if we didn't remove the data, we'd be out of business.
Yeah, well, those studies aren't like certification from the Food and Drug Administration by any means, which costs, you know, millions of dollars to acquire through all the tests that they do, and prevents anybody that's not a big pharmaceutical interest for pursuing it. And they're attacking all sorts of natural products under that same sort of banner.
Yeah, Chris, you're right, and that's exactly what they told me. They said we could, FDA said, well, if they would sponsor a multi-site study that would cost like $10 million, whatever, you know, after the studies proved the data, then they could retain the data on their label. So they said, no, we'll just change the label, right? So yeah. I had to get that out there, Deanna. Thanks for that, because I think, Chris, that the combination could really be awesome for a lot of people, the tart cherry concentrate with the cannabis.
Mm. Yeah, well, interesting stuff for sure. And lots of people reporting lots of effectivity for different types of cancer with these cannabis oils that Rick Simpson and other people have been promoting for some time now.
Right. Okay, well, thank you so much, Fred.
Thanks, Deanna.
All righty, bye-bye. Okay, was Shakespeare on pot?
Well, this is interesting. This is a story I've been following myself for close to 2 decades. And this goes to 2 South African academics, Professor Francis Thackeray and Professor Nicholas Vandermeer, a theory that Shakespeare was a secret cannabis user, and that references to the Dark Lady in his sonnets were actually veiled references to cannabis use. And based on their theory, they were able to convince the Avalon Trust in England, I guess is they have the property where Shakespeare lived, mm-hmm. and artifacts found on the property include various fragments from old pipes, smoking pipes, clay pipes were often broke and stuff like that. And they acquired a number of samples of these pipes from Shakespeare's property in the time period he lived in. And some of them did, in fact, according to tests, sort of tests that they would do to identify drugs at a crime scene. The police actually did the test, and they showed residues of cannabis in some of the pipe fragments. which added to their theory. And interestingly, in Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream, which is about the King of the Fairies, Oberon.
Right.
Earlier, there's this grimoire, now known as the Book of Oberon, because it has an invocation of Oberon, has a recipe for cannabis ointments used in conjunction with magic mirrors.
Wow. Alrighty, we're taking a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Time. Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
About 6 months ago, my wife bought Extendivite. She didn't tell me she was giving it to me. So after about 3 days, I said, maybe the weather's changed or something. I said, my legs feel really good. And she goes, well, I've been giving you this stuff, and it was the Extendivite. And you know that I'm about 75% better. I can actually climb stairs now, and I can get up out of chairs. I can even get down and, I got to work under a table or a computer table and work on a computer. I can actually get back up off the floor. You know what? It's an amazing product. I didn't think anything short of having surgery was going to help.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Chris Bennett, the author of Liber 420, Cannabis, Magical Herbs, and the Occult. And we're talking about Shakespeare on Pot, and you just mentioned the work, A Midsummer Night's Dream. And when I took a class on Shakespeare, I remember that, thinking, wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah. Also in A Midsummer Night's Dream, the figure of Puck is also referred to as Robin Goodfellow. And
yes.
A very important figure in English folklore who has a long history of connection with cannabis. His catchphrase, in fact, was hemp and hampin'. And all sorts of folk stories about him helping maidens break the fibers off the hemp stalks and helping them with their chores and demanding that hemp be given to the people and stuff like that. Robin Goodfellow is also associated with the history of Robin Hood. And it's said that the 12 merry men in Robin Hood make up the number of a witch's cove in 13. And Robin Goodfellow was often the name taken by heads of witch's covens, according to some accounts.
Indeed. So, according to the evidence, Shakespeare actually did use pot.
Well, there's, pipes from his property, certainly.
Yes.
Were found that contained residues of cannabis, And certainly he must have had some awareness of his occult connections, because in A Midsummer Night's Dream, he has Patka, who's associated with Robin Goodfellow, say, "What hempen homespuns do we have here near the cradle of the fairy queen?" Incorporated an ointment put in eyes on the quest of Oberon, who had a grimoire contemporary to this period where cannabis was used for seeing visions and magic mirrors.
Wow. Now, there were the other works that he composed that also had indications of his pot use, correct?
Well, there's, you know, the evidence of awareness of drug use. We were talking about the sorts of potion that put somebody into a death-like state of suspended emanation. And in Romeo and Juliet, there's the account where Juliet wants to fool people into thinking she's dead so she can escape and be with Romeo, and drinks a vial and appears dead. But then Romeo sees her and thinks she's actually died and commits suicide. And then she wakes up and sees he's dead and commits suicide. So that's the same sort of tincture we're talking about in relation to the Decameron and the Templars and the whole crucifixion thing. And it's also suggested that Prospero the magician in The Tempest, the story of The Tempest, is based on the Elizabethan magician Dr. John Dee, who was known for seeing, using magic mirrors with his scribe, Edward Kelly. And they were doing this in the same time period that the Sefer Raziel, Liber Salomonis, and the Book of Oberon were being passed around as grimoires prescribing the use of cannabis with magic mirrors. And in John Dee's writings about these visionary events, which are still popular today with the cultists, he talks about drinking an elixir that makes him feel drowsy. And in another event, Edward Kelly, the scribe, is trying to talk to a deity in a mirror. And he's like, "Well, you haven't brought me any drugs. How come you don't have any drugs here?" And Kelly shows the mirror an empty apothecary box, which is a drug box. And then the entity in the mirror saying, "Well, what about ointments? Don't you have any ointments?" So it's pretty clear that psychoactive substances were being used in at least some of these occasions of mirror scrying, as prescribed in contemporary grimoires of the time.
Right. Now, in chapter 19, The Church versus the Devil's Weeds, and you refer to the 1484 papal bull and Pope Innocent the 13th, the 8th, and supposedly he condemned cannabis use as a form of satanic mass.
Yeah, that's not true. This is, I also tried to address some of the misinformation that's spread around about cannabis history, and numbers of books on the history of cannabis have suggested that that was the case, that Pope Innocent released his papal bull, which condemned cannabis as a satanic sacrament. And I read it in so many different books, I just assumed it was correct. But when you go back to the actual document in Latin, as a friend of mine, Tom Hatzis, has done, and Dr. Ethan Russo has done as well, that's not the case at all. It doesn't mention cannabis. There's no mention of any sort of drug whatsoever in it. So I'm not sure where that misinformation originated, but it's been spread around for decades, and it's been some time. In fact, the relationship between the church and cannabis is complicated, and drugs in general, different things happened at different times and places, and we're talking about centuries of history here, so it's difficult to pin down anything particular like that. Like, you could have a situation where, as I mentioned earlier, a pope that was friendly with the Templars wrote a medical treatise and included a recipe for a cannabis. And it was perfectly acceptable at the time. Later, that same pope was dug up after he had died and condemned of heresy. Different things happened at different times. And a lot of it depended on how you used it and the conjunction of it. And it was the conjunction of, you know, maybe being in possession of some sort of evidence of magical use along with the herbs that was particularly damning in the eyes of the church, you know. And we can see that you know, they definitely had their eyes on cannabis, because in that same chapter I have a Catholic document where cannabis is compared to the ways of the sinner, and they go always twisted like cannabis rope, and you know, and it must rot like cannabis redding in the field, and all these different ways that the sinners were like cannabis, and the cannabis plant is totally demonized. And so there must have been some association there that caused this comparison to take place. Not, you know, you might have a situation where cannabis medicine might be purely okay, but then if there's certain invocation and prayers in combination with that, where it would be seen as very heretical and a total sin.
Sure.
And, so there's different things happening at different times and places.
Right. All righty, we have a caller, Jeff in Georgia. Jeff, welcome.
Hello, how are you all doing?
Great.
I had
you?
A question. Good. I didn't listen to the whole program. I've listened to pieces of it. But, you know, I remember we went to the moon. I remember it well. I remember the 70s when more people started smoking pot. I seen a lot of them ruin their lives. Today, I see marijuana being pushed for medicinal purposes. But, you know, could we have went to the moon? I mean, should the president be smoking dope? How about the Pope? I mean, I think
a famous rocket scientist that helped pave the way for getting to the moon. You bring up our ability to go to the moon was this figure known as Jack Parsons, one of the founders of Caltech, rocket scientist, well-known rocket scientist, and a user of cannabis. So expert in rocket fuel, an expert in rocket fuel, solid rocket fuels that paved the way for rockets. And he was a user of cannabis. So if you're going to talk about something like getting to the moon, then yeah, cannabis does play a role in that, because one of the greatest rocket scientists of history, Jack Parsons, was a user of cannabis. And if you're going to judge people for, you know, you talk about lives ruined in the 60s. I don't see that. You know, I think you take a look at any sample of music that's worthwhile, that's persevered, that people are still listening to 50 years after it was written. You take a look at rock and roll and how much of that was influenced by the use of cannabis. And things like fighting the Vietnam War and questioning the government, women's liberation. You know, one of the biggest things they pointed to in the fight against the Vietnam War was the cannabis smoke in the fields. This is why Nixon, you know, who was a racist, who helped initiate the war on drugs and blamed its use on Jews and blacks and people like that. So, you know, you want to talk about social change. I don't know. I see the 60s as a great time of social change, and cannabis playing a pivotal role in that social change myself.
Okay, we could talk about the 60s all day. You remember the coup d'etat of Kennedy. Now, you know, that had Jewish interest, okay?
Well, there was a lot Kennedy of things. Himself, some people say Kennedy was a cannabis user. You know, Google Kennedy and cannabis. There's some pretty convincing evidence that he was a cannabis user as well, you know? And I don't know, I think there's an important differentiation to be made between Jewish interests and Zionist interests. And, you know, I prefer to you know, if I'm going to condemn anything, my concerns are with the various aspects of Zionism, not Judaism itself, per se, but the Zionist tendencies and agenda. And that's a very real thing that we can see taking place in the apartheid of Israel and the continual taking of land over there.
Yeah,
as well as American politics.
If marijuana was only used medicinally, you know, my dad, when he died, they gave him morphine. If maybe marijuana would help, but I am totally against marijuana as a recreational drug.
Well, that should be something you can only apply to yourself, you know. To try to apply that to somebody else's own free will, like myself, I'm a regular user of cannabis. I used cannabis today before this interview, in fact. To try and apply that is fascism in my mind, you know, trying to suppress the freedom of somebody else to use a natural plant that humanity has been using for tens of thousands of years is fascism.
Okay, Jeff, you had another question?
When you look at Mexico, yes. What about violence and IQ tied, the lowering of IQ and the raising of violence tied to marijuana use? I'll get off the air and listen.
You only have drug gangs when you have prohibition. It's not got anything to do with legal cannabis. This is a product of the prohibition that people like yourself are promoting here. And the violence as well is a product of that prohibition. That's right. Not something that's inherently known to involve cannabis. You can go to places where cannabis has been consumed for thousands of years, like India, and find very peaceful people like sadhus and yogis partaking of this herb, or Sufis in the Middle East that have used this cannabis sort of preparation for generations. So that's not inherently a cannabis problem. It's a result of prohibition, you know?
Right. Okay, Jeff, thank you for your phone call. All righty, let's take Sherry in Kansas. Sherry?
Hi, Deanna. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
Hey.
Good show. Very interesting. You know, Deanna, it struck me that I've got Jack Herrera's book, The Emperor
Lovely.
Wears No Clothes. And you know, the main things they say in there, I haven't looked at it for a long time, but that DuPont and Hearst were mainly behind making it illegal. But I think, because didn't Reefer Madness come out in 37, and in 1938 the FDA came into existence, and I think it was also about getting it so it was illegal to use for medicine.
No, the FDA came into existence in 1906, I think.
Well, I know the report from that report that Rockefeller was responsible for, but maybe I'm thinking, well, I don't know why it struck me, but, you know, why wasn't it on the grass list, you know?
You know, it wasn't a major medicine prior to prior to 1937, at one time I put together a museum collection of cannabis and other drug artifacts, and I collected cannabis medicine bottles from prior prohibition from the early 20th and late 19th century, and it's astounding how many medicines it was used, and it was like a common ingredient to cough medicines, a common ingredient for corns and bunions and other growths, a common ingredient in medicines for female complaints, and widely used, popular medicines of the time. And there were doctors arguing against the prohibition of cannabis when they brought in the Marijuana Tax Act in 1937, you know. And a lot of people didn't really realize what was taking place. They were more familiar to cannabis medicines under the name of cannabis and to hemp as hemp, you know. They didn't really realize this term marijuana, which was actually a Mexican term. Now, Anslinger didn't create the term marijuana, as a lot of people like to suggest. You can find the term marijuana in Mexican pharmacological lexicons going back to 1850. So it'd be around quite a while, but English-speaking people in North America, they didn't recognize this term. A lot of them thought they were talking about local weed and other plants that were quite damaging. And so this really focused propaganda campaign. And a lot of racism was used as well. You know, it's important to remember the role of racism in cannabis prohibition and how it was taking place, because what was happening at the jazz clubs where cannabis was being consumed were blacks and whites were fraternizing for the first time, you know. And that's, I think, one of the effects of cannabis is it can take you out of that sort of societal program tunnel vision. Reality that we're programmed into, and it can break you out of that momentarily. And so all of a sudden you can see the former demonized individual across the table from you as an actual human being. And that was one of the biggest effects of cannabis being consumed in the jazz clubs, was this making people, in a sense, colorblind in a very positive way. And that's why racism was used as a means of demonization, including foreign terms for cannabis, such as marijuana, which were not widely recognized.
Well, and you could also grow your own medicine. So that's why they had to make it illegal, too.
Absolutely.
So that's all I have. Thanks.
Grow your own medicine, grow your own food, grow your own clothes, and God bless Jack Herer. I knew Jack Herer personally. He wrote the foreword to my first book, Gringo, The Tree of Life, Marijuana, Magic, and Religion, called it the companion to his classic, The Emperor Wears No Clothes. A greater man I have not known.
Great. All righty. Well, we'll be going to a break momentarily. Yes, I do believe that I read his book. The Emperor Has No Clothes, and I have a huge book collection, and I also have a lot of Kindle and PDF files. Anyway, we'll be right back in 3 minutes.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. And our guest today has been Chris Bennett. He is the author of Lieber, 420, cannabis, magical herbs, and the occult. And this easily could have been two books. This is really a very big, big book. And you've done a very good comprehensive review of so many things. You have illustrations in here. You have the bibliography, a wonderful index, and there's just you've left nothing out. It's fabulous.
Well, thanks. That's a really great compliment. My other books are all big books as well. I don't think I've written anything in my four books that's under 500 pages. And I actually had to pull a lot of stuff out of Libra 420 to get it down to that size. Initially, when I started on the project, I thought I would be lucky to get maybe a chapter out about the medieval and Renaissance material, because I didn't think there was that much on it. But as I began digging into it, there's not much written about that history of cannabis. As I began digging into it, that took over the whole book, and I thought the focus would really be on the 19th and 20th century occult use of cannabis, and I ended up having to condense that material down to a single chapter and pull out a large portion of that material regarding the 19th and 20th century occult use of cannabis. And now I'm working on another book that follows up on Libra 420 that details the use of cannabis and other drugs in the occult in the 19th and 20th century in more detail. And my other books, my earlier books, deal with the role of cannabis in the ancient world, which I was limited to about two chapters in Libra 420 to give some sort of background and origins for this later magical use. But there's so much to be said on the ancient use of cannabis. You could probably write a few books on the different areas that it was used and the different cultures that it was used by.
Indeed. Yes, I was going to say, so you've got material for your next book, and that's great to keep producing, and terrific. There's so much in this book, honestly. It's just overwhelming, really overwhelming. And you've talked about the Illuminati, which we don't have time to talk about, but you've talked about that. You've talked about many, many things. And I love the illustrations. I think that really adds something. A picture is worth a thousand words, as they say.
And yeah. You don't want to be too dry, and it's important to document stuff, but if it's all just footnotes and references, it's a little hard for most people to make it through. You want to keep it interesting, and I always try to make sure I've got a few obscure facts on every page and some great illustrations to bring it all to life, because illustrations affect the right brain in a way that helps bring the left brain into tune with it, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, you have to appeal to both sides. And I really like the old pieces of art that you've used. Really great. Well, thank you so much. That went by fast.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being on the program.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much. Okay, bye-bye, listeners. Talk with you next week.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds, up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield Tactical Bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.